And we're back. Welcome to Deep Thinking, the motorcycle cooking and mom podcast.
Number 13.
Number 13.
And Catch, too.
Yeah. What's the name? Oh, Plaid. That's right. Plaid's back. Plaid is making a return appearance. We'll see if we can get her to comment this time. Who are you? Who am I? Why are we here?
Oh, you keep using that.
What? No. I'm Michael Gucci. This is Ed Sorbo, and you're listening to this because you got
nothing better to do,
and you dig motorcycle road
racing. Or you're driving somewhere far.
Exactly.
Books on tape, dude. If you're driving across the country, that's the way to go.
Believe me, right? Did that?
Hey, mom, this is a test. Test number two
again. Right?
So if you check out my blog page on my website, Lindemann Engineering website, and you go back a little while, you can find a post that says, "Mom, check in," or something like that, or "mom test," because she told me she pays attention to my blog.
Okay.
And so I tested her, and I posted the reply. 12 hours and 32 minutes later, she called me. "Yes, Ed, I read your blog."
Ah, jeez.
I win.
I know. You can't believe you're... Okay, Walter Cronkite once said, "If your mother says she loves you, check it out." It was a metaphor, Ed. He didn't mean to, like, grill your mom. That's a good way. You know what? My mom used to hit us when we were kids, okay? With these orange rubber slippers with these, like, wedge heels. She used to whip them at us, okay? And I'm telling you, she was good at this shit, right?
My mom was a door slammer. Okay. I never got hit.
Oh, boy. Yeah, it was just, wow. I was like a boomerang, you know? She was like Olympic-level slipper thrower, right? She still has those. And I told my wife about the slippers, right? So we were at my parents' house a few years back, and she notices the orange slippers. And so Sandy says to my mom, "Hey, why do you still have the orange slippers?" And my mom says, "You never know when I might need them." You never know when Michael's going to start acting up again.
Andy Bumatai was a local Hawaiian comedian.
Okay.
And he did a stand-up routine. He actually did pretty well. He went to Vegas, had a show for a while.
Cool.
It's tricky, though, to carry regional...
Oh,
humor to someplace
humor
else.
Humor is culturally based.
But
he
had a routine about rubber slippers.
Okay.
Everybody in Hawaii wears rubber slippers.
Right.
They're easy to, you kick them off as you walk in the house. You don't wear shoes in the house in Hawaii.
Right.
And he has a routine about that with mom whacking you in the head with the rubber slipper. It reminded me of that. Although your mom whips him across the room, so...
Humor is culturally based. That's why.
You know what, though?
What?
Every mom in the world, when she's truly pissed off, uses the child's full name.
Oh, yeah.
And the child then knows she's in trouble, regardless of what culture you're in.
I better go to ground for a while, man. I got to stay hidden until the heat goes off.
So anyway, my mom's being tested. We'll see how long it takes her after this show posts to contact me.
Sounds reasonable, I suppose. This is why, by the way. This is why I can't watch network television anymore. All the jokes are written to appeal to people all across the country and halfway around the world. So they all come down to, you know, there's a difference between men and women. And you're just like, oh, God, there's not a cliff high enough to jump off of. And we'll save you the conversation on cliff diving as a sport, except for I love what Kevin Nealon said about it. It's got two rankings, Grandmaster National Champion and stuff on a rock. What are we talking about today? Oh, why we do this? You know, I was thinking about this. I'll do the shortcut, cut through the infield version of this story. I was watching races at Weir West, the season opener at Auto Club Speedway. I like watching bikes on the banking. Really cool. First time I went to Daytona, I went when it got rained out that year. In the mid-90s, 95 or something like that.
I love how specific you are.
Right? Well, it was a long time
that
ago.
That year, in the mid-90s. Right? Oh, yeah, I remember that one.
How many times has Daytona been rained out? Twice. I got to go to one of them. I flew all the way there. Anyway, I digress. But I did get to see the Super 750 Super Sport races. I think it was Super Sport or Super Stock. I forget. And watching the Yosh bikes up on the banking, drafting each other back and forth. Totally cool. And I thought, I was watching it this weekend. I was watching the guys on the banking, you know. Just like, God, there's something really cool about a fast bike up on the banking, you know.
You know, if
really
you're
awesome
at Daytona and there's only one bike or a few bikes on the banking.
Right.
And it has to be pretty quiet.
Mm-hmm.
So a testing day, you're there by yourself.
Right.
And the bike is far away on the banking. You can't hear the exhaust. You hear the sound of the air parting as the bike goes through it. It's a ripping, whistling,
yeah,
kind of sound. It's really surprising, right? You'd think the noise of the pipe would be totally dominant, but that noise, for some reason, doesn't carry as far.
Interesting.
Yeah.
One of the guys I know I interviewed for an Isle of Man story a while ago talked about being a spectator there and being on the side of the road when a superbike comes by 200 miles an hour. And
that's called the Doppler effect.
No, no, not the sound of the bike. It was the impact of all the air that bike is shoving out of the way. And when it goes by just a few feet from you, you feel it. It's visceral.
You know, that's a great explanation of why you can't go faster.
What?
Right? The wind resistance increases exponentially.
Exponentially, right.
And then what happens is the wind is pushing back so hard that you just can't have that much grip.
Right.
You can have more horsepower, the wheel just starts spinning.
I was, whatchamacallit, again, that's why hideously underpowered bikes can get up to speed.
Get great if you give,
you give them enough room and they're slippery enough.
Well, yeah, if they're smaller.
Yeah. I was watching, again, I'm killing time, right? YouTube, the 125... The 125 TT from 1964 or 67, somewhere in there. And the four-stroke 125 bikes,
well,
they're not powerful. They're averaging 88 miles an hour around.
Remember,
there.
Though, those GP tracks back then were mostly highways.
Yeah.
And well, so the straightaways were like
it was a
3 miles long.
Yeah, it was the TT.
You know, they had a lot of time to get to speed.
Yeah, exactly. And, you're
and then going downhill or who knows what.
Right, but, right.
Yeah.
So I sent you an email, and it was a great story. I said, Ed, what's your favorite drafting story? And what is your favorite drafting story, Ed?
So I was in a Suzuki Cup race with Wira at Seattle International Raceway.
What kind of bike?
Suzuki Cup. GSXR 750.
Okay.
So what that means is the Wira 750 Supersport class
right.
had Suzuki contingency money available, and so much was available that basically there were no other bikes in the class other than GSXRs.
Right.
And so it was called Suzuki Cup. And so we were there for Team Hawaii was.
It wasn't literally a race just for Suzuki's?
No, you could have other bikes in, I remember
really?
Specifically. Yeah, okay. Because you'd be like, what the hell are you bothering in your Kawasaki for,
what
man?
Are you thinking?
Crazy. So Team Hawaii is there doing the endurance race. And then I have my 750 along for sprint races on Sunday. And I'm in this battle with this local guy. He knows the track better than I do.
Got it.
And we're going back and forth, you know, somewhere in the top 10. I don't remember exactly. So there's some money available.
Right.
And he's a little bit bigger than I am. He's a lot bigger than I am.
Oh, boy. We're not calling him fat,
He was fat. Absolutely. So I'm behind him on a straightaway, and I'm like, oh, no problem. I got this guy. Right? And when you catch up to somebody, the advantage of drafting is you get in that low pressure zone
right.
behind
you,
him.
And you pick up a lot of speed right
because
there at the
Because you're
end.
Not pushing the air
right.
that he's pushing.
But at the closer you get, the more you
the
pick up speed.
The closer you get, and so you speed up. Well, if the guy in front of you is big enough,
mm-hmm.
that speed up is greater than what you're used to. And so I come in pretty close, and when I pull out only just barely that I have to. So I get the draft advantage
right.
for as much as possible. In fact, I scared somebody into bumping his engine cutoff switch on the run to the line at Road America in 250s in a heat race one time and helped me get his position because I passed him so close as I went by.
Really?
Yeah.
He just said, oh, this is terrifying. I'm going to turn the motor off.
He just started and it bumped his engine cutoff switch.
Okay.
And I know this because I've asked him like repeatedly about it because it's a great story. So anyway... So I catch it up to this big guy. He's got a big hole in the air. And then my bike speeds up so much that I nearly ram him. I have to flick so hard, and I close the throttle as I did it to pull out and not hit him
right.
that I lost all my momentum. And I yeah. So the next lap, I come down the front straightaway. Same thing, but this time I'm ready for it. No! I still get sucked in so fast that it freaks me out and I lose my advantage. And then so finally I get by him. But then on the third try...
Right.
Then he passes me on the brakes into turn two. Now, being that I'm a pro racer,
right.
you know that I
this
have my excuse
deeply upsetting.
Lined up for this. My you're going to love this.
All
How
right.
did big fat guy pass me on the brakes?
Oh, that's really easy.
Yeah, he couldn't slow down. He went by. He was trying to stop, and he just moved.
So his
right
lack
by
of
me.
Skill work to his benefit.
The guy has huge skills to get around the track, even close to my lap time, with that much extra. He had like two Eds on that bike, right?
I love the way that your definition of skill is, can you relative be as fast to me, as me?
Absolutely. Right, exactly. That's the way it always works.
That's Einstein's theory of relativity, right? All things are related to Sorbo.
You're a genius. Now, I can't remember who won the race or how they came out, but I remember that lesson from drafting. And I've never made that mistake since.
So two things that came up while you were talking about that, and then I stopped, because that's where I stopped listening to you. The guy that shows up at a Suzuki Cup race with the Suzuki, right?
No, it's working. I know it's working, but I forgot to start the stopwatch.
Smooth move, but just look at it.
So fine. I can't see what that says. Oh, it says 16 minutes.
One of us is going to
okay,
have
to. Okay, so this watch.
Well, no, that can't be 16 minutes. That's got to be... that's 10 minutes and 47
minutes.
Seconds.
Okay, yep. So we got 20 minutes on this watch. Sorry, folks, that was one of our little digressions. Oh. We're not pros. What are you going to do?
You know?
Click and Clack started out like we did.
When I...
The Tappet
first,
Brothers.
When I first realized...
Car Talk.
Right. When I first realized I needed reading glasses...
Oh, yeah.
I walked over to the reading glass stand at the 99-cent store, and I was like, look at all those old bastards buying reading glasses. And I was
we all went through this. Oh, shit, I'm one of them. The thing that got me was I finally put a pair on, and I'm like, wow, this doesn't hurt to read.
This is great. Right?
I don't care how I look anymore. My wife's already married to me. She's stuck with me.
She can't leave.
I'm wearing reading glasses. You want to know, we mentioned my mom earlier.
Right.
My mom has an evil streak. You want to know how evil my mom is?
How evil is your mom?
My mom, I turned 50 a little while ago.
Right.
51 now.
Right.
My mom, when I turned 50,
right,
ordered up and had sent to me a membership in AARP.
Did she actually pay for it?
Oh, yeah. First year.
All covered.
Covered by my mom.
God.
And she's like, when she's first time she saw me wearing reading glasses, she got a big kick out of that. Thanks, Mom.
Yeah,
love you.
Yeah, see? Yeah. That's why she makes those bombs.
Why do you keep pointing at that bike? What point were you trying to make?
So the Suzuki Cup thing.
Yes.
Okay. It's really, there were other bikes in the field. There were
besides
non-Suzukis.
The two of us? Oh, there was at least one, yeah.
That's insane. Okay.
Well, if you only have whatever brand of bike you have,
okay, but
you want to race
for whatever reason. Then I thought, while you were thinking of it, I wonder if somebody showed up with the Suzuki sticker over the Kawasaki sticker and just was like, you know what? Maybe nobody will notice, right?
We noticed.
And then I was thinking of the guy I raced with.
You know, it was a national weekend though. Like all the Team Hammer guys there, were Kurt Hall guys were there.
Right, right.
Those guys all, you weren't going to win that race.
Right, okay. Well, I was just thinking of a guy that I used to race with who would switch back and forth from tires depending on who was giving the most contingency that weekend or whatever. And so he solved the problem of constantly taking stickers on and off the bike.
Putting both on the bike?
All four of them. Just, which I think, to go back to our sponsorship shows, is kind of defeating the purpose.
You know what, though, right? If you're bold enough, at some point people are like, okay,
you
whatever.
What? Or maybe, you know? Or maybe you put like the Pirelli stickers.
You know, in the early days of contingency,
right?
They hadn't run into those problems yet,
right?
Now, when you sign a contingency form, it'll say you've got to have R2 exclusively. But back then, it didn't used to say that.
Well, maybe if you're really smart, you put the stickers like Pirelli on the front left, Dunlop on the front right, and then just send them whatever picture has got the appropriate sticker in it, right?
There's a tire vendor guy out there all pissed off right now. His name's Michael Gugis. He said it.
What? I didn't do nothing. There's no evidence. I have pictures of me not doing it.
Yeah,
which
there
is
you go.
One of the...
Pictures of me not doing it. I like that.
Hang around with the public defenders for a while. You know, we catch the dumb ones, and thank God we catch
the dumb ones.
Stainless Steel what?
Stainless Steel Rat is a character in a series of books. I wish I could remember the author's name. And he's criminal guy.
Okay.
But he's like a Robin Hood criminal guy.
Okay.
And he wants to learn how to do criminal stuff.
Right.
So he gets himself caught and goes to jail, finds out only the dumb ones are in here.
Right.
So he escapes, finds the criminal mastermind guy, gets trained up by him, and goes on in.
I gotta tell you, at first I was like, oh God, why don't we catch everybody? And then you realize... First, it's probably important to catch the bad ones first, okay? It's probably important to catch the stupid people because anytime you can take dumb people and remove them from the productive flow of society, Scott Adams says you're better off.
Yeah, Darwin Awards.
That's why you do the lateral arabesque in corporate management. You put people in a position, you can't fire them, Okay, you can't demote them, but you can put them in the long-term strategic planning department where they can't do any damage to you. The other thing
I like to own a small enough company where I can fire anybody, no problem.
That would,
hey, we had a topic.
We do.
And it was reasons to races and great stories and things that you've accomplished.
We're getting there. Here's a great story that reminded me of with the bump in the bumper, the button one. I can't remember who it was who was racing at Macau. Last lap, run to the flag. He's got some electronic system that he's not used to, and he starts hitting the button and lowering the power on the bike.
Why do you start pushing buttons?
He was thinking that he was in the wrong setting, and if he pushed the button, he would kick into the full, I don't need traction control anymore, I'm on a straightaway, you know, that sort of thing. He's going the wrong way. The other guy's just pulling away from him.
Awesome.
My favorite drafting story. Okay, I was thinking about this the other day. Solo races, 20 lappers at Willow, Saturday afternoon. First one I did with the 650 motor in the bike, because I did several of them with the 500 motor in the bike. Nearly won the championship, and I'm like, next year coming back with the 650 motor, I'm going to get these guys right. I don't get a great start.
You know that de-stroking, de-boring, making a bike smaller,
yes,
removing a cylinder,
right.
That is the utmost in bonehead credibility.
I'm slowing
your bike down on purpose.
I am going to disagree with you. Okay. It's a time-honored
tradition.
Continue
with your story.
Read the history of the BMW R90S. You'll find the guys who built and raced the predecessors to those bikes did that frequently with the BMW motors. They de-stroked them, and then the bike was legal, because they started with an illegal size motor, stroked it down to what was where it was legal, and then the bike would hold together at racing speeds. These are air-cooled twins. You should see the pictures of those guys at the Isle of Man with cylinder heads on the ground. Holy crap, right? Why was I thinking this? Right. Went out there, didn't get the greatest start. Came through turn 9, I'm in fourth.
Definition of didn't get a greatest start is last.
No, wasn't in the lead. That's my definition. Okay. Come around turn 9, one of my friends tries around the outside pass at the exit of 9. Doesn't quite work. He gets shoved into the dirt. I like think to myself, I don't want any part of this. I don't want to be around these guys. Vic Elford, the sports car driver, was once... when Porsche,
that was a drafting story?
I'm getting there.
Okay.
When Vic Elford was offered, he was driving Porsche when they introduced their 917. And the 917 had a nickname of the Widowmaker, and it had earned it. Okay? Nobody wanted to drive this thing at Le Mans. And he said, I'll drive it. And the factory said, well, we need somebody to drive it, but why do you want this thing? It's not very stable under braking, and it doesn't handle well. He said, I don't care about that. It's a 24-hour race. This car is 25 miles an hour faster than anything else on the planet. I'm not going to get involved in braking scraps with people. I'm not going to try and do outside. I'm going to go wait till we get to the straight. I'm going to go whistling past them. End of discussion.
Playing to the strength of your vehicle is a good plan.
Yeah, right? You know? So I thought, you know what? I don't want any part of this. I need to get around these guys. And right at that moment, it was beautiful. All three of them just fanned out in front of me. You could have drafted those guys. If you were following them with the semi, you could have picked up a draft. They cut such a big hole in the air. And I saw it. And again, you know, I'm just a club racer. I'm not a pro. You know, but it was like, that's an opportunity. How do I make this work? Came up with the plan, went around all three of them on the front straight, swooped back in front of them, and that was the last I saw of them. That was for 19 laps. And I liked that. That really brought me a great deal of satisfaction. Because racing's hard. You're on a bike, you're in a race, it's a difficult position to be in. And I know it sounds not that big a deal to us. That's because we do it. You describe what you do to other people, and they just look at you like you've just decided to go cliff diving. You know, they think you're absolutely insane. It's a difficult environment to function in. And when you can function in that environment, that brought me a great deal. You know, that particular incident brought me a great deal of satisfaction. Figuring out what to do, making it work.
It's playing chess at 100 miles an hour.
It really is.
You have to do both physical and mental stuff at the same time. And there's an element of risk that makes all of it more serious.
Keith Code talks about the survival reflex, you know, and that is part of it. You have to, again, to do it well. And I don't care what level you're racing at. I mean, I don't care if you're racing mini bikes and it's two guys on the track and there's nothing, you know, there's nothing at stake but a beer. You still
chocolate milk.
Okay, chocolate milk, right? What, we're not taking alcohol advertising sponsorship.
Crack dealers can sponsor us, but exactly, alcohol.
No beer.
Budweiser doesn't need us. They got Clydesdales and puppy dogs in their commercials.
You know, Jesus. You know how popular those guys are?
Puppy dogs? They're very popular.
Budweiser.
Clydesdales?
One of my students, who's an actor, actually told me that I have no idea if this is true or not, but this makes sense. Budweiser doesn't pay people to make ads for them anymore. They hold competitions. And at the end of the month, whoever's made the best commercial for them for free gets to be the Budweiser and then put on their resume, "We made the commercial for Budweiser." You have to be able to, you know, I think personally, I find it really satisfying to be in a very difficult position, be able to overcome those survival reflexes and think your way into doing something. That's why I like the long races. What?
2 minute warning.
No.
Or it, 2 minute
we don't do
board.
A 2 minute now. 2 minute board already?
It says 20 minutes on that thing. Is that the right number? There's
probably
two numbers on there, 20 and 14.
Oh, it's got to be 14. Let me see. Hold on.
So,
reading glasses.
My reason for
there's
racing,
no 14 on here.
Whatever. It was the numbers changing constantly.
Yeah, no, there is a 14, but I think that's the number of hours left we've got.
Okay, so we're over on time. So my reason for starting racing is because it seemed like a good idea, right? That's how I got started. And then it quickly became this really challenging, difficult thing that I was pretty good at.
Right.
And so I was getting rewards.
At least good enough that you got the rewards that you wanted.
Well, I won my first race, so I'm pretty good.
Okay.
So, you know, I kept doing it.
Right.
And then some amount of habit came into it, right? It was the thing I did, you know? And, of course, I was doing other stuff. Every Friday night, for $3, I'd go drag racing.
Cool.
Every other Friday night, for 10 or 15, I forget, you could go TT racing at the Oval Track.
TT racing.
Dirt bikes.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, right? And then on weekends that weren't races, go trail riding. This is all in Hawaii. But quickly I learned that it was an opportunity to learn in a difficult environment. And you learn important things. And we all know the benefits you get from racing. You get discipline. You learn how to figure stuff out. You learn scientific principle. But here is a really, really cool thing that happened to me. It's happened a number of times. This is just one of the best examples of it. So I had a shop called Sport Bike Hawaii.
Right.
Still exists. And I was the president of the club, and I was in a position to, and I was teaching both MSF certified instructor, and I was teaching a racing school.
Okay.
I was frequently in the position of coach, mentor, prophet, if you like. And I frequently disciplined people. I frequently told people, dude, I saw you riding on a street without your helmet.
Right.
Going three times the speed limit.
Right.
What the hell's wrong with you? That's bad image for us.
Right.
Right. You're going back and forth in front of the same six houses on some windy stretch of the road. You're gonna piss everybody off. Right. You have to behave at a certain level. And once you go to the racetrack, you realize, fuck, I can go so fast in this corner that I still remember I had my favorite corner and I used to go faster than anybody could go through there on the street. Right.
Right.
Then I went to my first race. Then I came back and I did my favorite corner again. I went, wasn't even close. And if I try to go as fast as you actually could go, if there was runoff room and yada, 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 they'd shoot me. They wouldn't arrest me. They'd just straight to shoot you. So anyway, I had this one guy that I kind of got down on him pretty hard for the way he was behaving. And he disappeared for a while. And I thought, I pushed too hard. I lost him as a customer.
Right.
Many years later, at Hawaii Raceway Park, this guy walks up to me with a woman, clearly his wife, holding clearly his baby.
Okay.
And he introduces himself to me, and I remember him.
Okay.
And he tells me that if it wasn't for me and what I told him, he would not have his wife and his baby now. He would have done something stupid, and he wouldn't have grown up to be the person that he is now, and yada, yada, yada. And I'm like, holy shit, how cool is that? So how about that for a reason to go racing?
How about that? That's your reward.
That is your reward.
The reward's not just the trophies.
When you have one of those really bad days when you crashed and you blew up and all of that kind of shit, and you can go, yeah, but I learned all of this good stuff and I helped do this cool thing, it's totally worth it.
It's a social reward.
Yep,
you
absolutely.
Know, we are social creatures.
We are.
And we do, as much as we like to say, I don't care what anybody thinks about us, it does matter. Not so much what other people think about us, but how we feel about what we've done to other people.
You know, that's one of the keys to being in a good relationship. Everybody who's in a good, solid, permanent relationship knows this. You can't meet the other person that you need until you are a good person yourself and you are happy with yourself.
Yes.
Right? And you have to go through some process, some lessons, some mistakes, something to learn. A real simple example is, look, a relationship is like racing. You got to work on your bike for hours and hours and hours
right.
so that you can ride it for 10 minutes.
Okay.
Right?
Okay.
And when we're young, we have this list and we expect to find this perfect person who's going to fit everything on the list and we don't have to do any work. It's just going to be easy.
It's just going to be
easy. You don't find the soulmate, you make a soulmate.
Yeah, and you do that by becoming that person
yourself.
You told me something. We were racing someplace and I was on the MZ, the single, and it was blowing head gaskets.
Every bike you've had has been in the weird category.
Exactly. I like odd bikes. I like
consistent. I'll give you that.
Wait till you see the next one.
Yeah, right.
but we had decided to change a head gasket, knowing that the motor was going to blow up.
Please stop saying we.
No,
I had nothing to do with this.
Yeah, what are you talking about? You did most of the work. And it was like a million degrees out there.
I deleted this memory.
Yeah, but we did, even though we knew that the head gasket was going to blow again, but it was going to probably last for long enough that I could get points for being in the race. And it was a miserable day. It was hot. It was screwed up. It was a mess, you know? We're doing this, and I'm knowing I'm coming back on the crash truck, you know?
And, the broken truck, not the crash truck.
Okay, but I remember just sitting there thinking exactly that. God damn it, why am I here? And Cody Burton, my friend, the guy who also races in MZ, patted me on the shoulder and said, you know why, Michael? He says, because you have put so much into this that you can walk from one end of this paddock to the other and everybody here will call you their friend. I thought, holy shit. Okay, that makes it a little bit easier to deal with, you know? It's a little bit easier to deal with.
Well, racing is a way to demonstrate. Not to just claim and not to just say, it's you've been there and you've done that. And it gives you, right? If you can do racing,
right?
Cars, motorcycles, airplanes, mountain climbing, hiking, run a marathon, whatever your thing is, it's difficult. That's why you like doing it.
Right.
If it's a video game, who cares?
Right.
Right? Then you're going to gain respect within your community and anywhere because people recognize you're doing something.
You're trying. And that self-respect makes you that person that you want to have a long-term endurance race with.
We truly are deep thinking. He's Michael Gugis.
He's Ed Sorbo. That's Aloha. Vlad the cat over there.